Brethren, what are the Ten Commandments? Are they just a list of rules, or are they something more? You know, Jesus spoke with people who knew the Ten Commandments backwards and forwards. But when Jesus started talking to them about it, they were shocked. Why? Do you really know what they're all about, brother? In Jerusalem, during the time when Jesus walked the earth, it was a common practice to whitewash tombs. There was actually a religious reason for doing this. It was based on a belief that walking over a tomb made a person ceremonially unclean. Whitewashing the tomb was a clear sign to stay away from this area. It also added a sense of attractiveness to a bleak-looking stone grave. And this makes Jesus' statements to some of the very religious people shocking and actually very insulting when he said to them, "You were like whitewashed tombs, which indeed appear beautifully outwardly, but are full of dead man's bones and all uncleanness." Brethren, think about it. What a gruesome image. Brethren, through this use of imagery, Jesus was making a point about what are commonly called the inner person, the thoughts that we have, the motivations of our real self, not the person that we sort of act out to show to everyone else. Brethren, authentic Christianity is more than religious ceremonies or trying to just look good from the outside. It is about God shaping and guiding our thoughts and our emotions. Brethren, we're going to look at how the Ten Commandments can help us in this Christian development of the inner person. Most Christians, brethren, nowadays believe you should keep the Ten Commandments. And at the same time, the Ten Commandments can seem sort of like a list of maybe a cold list of human bad behaviors. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not lie. Do not commit adultery. But brethren, when we look at the teachings of Jesus Christ, we find that he was very concerned with the reasons why people steal, the reasons why people lie, or why they commit adultery. His teachings not only deal with actions, but with our inner person, with our inner motivations. We're going to look at some of the Ten Commandments, not just from sort of an obvious description of bad behavior, but from the idea of the corresponding positive Christian virtue. Brethren, of virtue. And virtue, brethren, that is one of the words that can be very ambiguous. I mean, sometimes you think to yourself, what is virtue? What does it mean? Brethren, it's a religious sounding word, but what does it really mean? Virtue means having a high standard of moral goodness. And brethren, when we look at teachings of Jesus about the Ten Commandments, you find that his standards are a whole lot more than just not murdering your obnoxious, loudmouth next door neighbor, or not robbing a convenience store or the local Target. It's about why we do what we do. All of us have had the experience of knowing what is right, but struggling deep in our inner self because we want to do the wrong. Brethren, we've all seen the child who is told not to go into the swimming pool. So lays beside the pool and puts her hand in the water when she's told, "Hey, you weren't supposed to go into the pool." And she responds with, I'm not in the water. Just my hand is in the water. Think about it, brethren. This is the normal human way of trying to be right on the outside, but wanting to do wrong on the inside. Christian virtue is more than just not doing wrong. It's about being right in the inner person. Christian obedience to the Ten Commandments creates a lifestyle of avoiding bad behaviors. This obedience is what Jesus Christ wants from all of his followers, from all of us, brethren. But Jesus is concerned with more than just avoiding the bad behavior. He wants our motivations, our thoughts, our conduct, everything we do to reflect God's positive ways. So how do the Ten Commandments with all these thou shalt nots lead to Christians to be able to have a more positive virtue in the inner person? Well, let's think about what we're talking about here. God gives a commandment. These commands define basic wrong actions, what the Bible calls sin. Sin, that's just actions that are harmful to yourself and to others. And this is the first step in learning Christian virtue. It's what's called the letter of the law. Secondly, then we have the second step, which is, brethren, our response. Our response to the command. And our response is based on understanding God's love and his grace and his sacrifice of Jesus Christ and his resurrection for our sins. And now we endeavor to avoid this bad behavior. But as we begin, brethren, to do that, we have to begin to deal with the inner desires to live by the bad behavior. And this, brethren, leads us to a third step. The third step is a lifestyle that not only avoids bad behavior, but actually thrives on doing good. And the reason for that is a change not in only in our actions, but, brethren, in our thoughts, in our emotions, in our motivations that lead to that positive action. So, brethren, we start with the negative action, which is the command, but then there's a positive action. And that's the virtue. Now, it may seem a little complicated, but stay with me here, because Jesus explains this process exactly in the Sermon on the Mount. And here's what he says. So we're going to go on the Sermon on the Mount here in Matthew chapter 5, verse 21. Matthew chapter 5, verse 21. And he says in Matthew chapter 5, verse 21, "You have heard that it was said of old, you shall not murder, and whoever murders will be in danger of the judgment." Brethren, Jesus is referring here to the sixth of the Ten Commandments. And he's talking to a Jewish audience that has learned these commandments since they were children. They understood that murder was a sin, and there was a command against it. But then he says, "But I say to you, whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. Whoever says to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. But whoever says, you fool, shall be in danger of hell fire." Now, brethren, what is Jesus teaching here? Just to sum it up the action of murder begins, brother, in the inner person. Think about it. Uncontrolled anger, hatred in your heart, seeing other people as worthless or meaningless. These are the root causes that drive someone to take the life of another person. You may have never murdered, but if your inner life is filled with anger and hatred and prejudice and a burning desire for violent revenge, now, according to Jesus, brethren, this is the spirit of murder. So we can see what Jesus is teaching here, looking similar to what we're just talking about. The command, brethren, is not to murder. Do not commit murder. This teaches us that human life was created by God. And brethren, all human beings are made in the image of God. Every human being has value to God. Now, brethren, in our response to the command, then we do not murder. But according to Jesus, we have to deal with the root causes that causes people to want to murder. And that means we have to deal with our inner rage, our hatred, our anger, our need for revenge. But then there is a step of virtue. And you may ask yourself, what is that step? The positive Christian virtue is not to just not hate or not murder. It's, brethren, to actively love others. So we start with a negative command that starts with the most terrible of actions. And then we move forward to, and we have to deal with our inner things, the inner reasons. And then we have to turn it into something positive. We must actively love others. Now, let me show you what I mean, because Jesus continues with this same thought here in Matthew chapter 5, verse 44. Matthew chapter 5, verse 44, when he says, "But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be the sons of your Father in heaven. For he makes his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and the unjust." Brethren, let's look at this again. Don't murder. Don't hate or degrade others. But now we must actively love. And this is the Christian virtue. It's one thing not to kill somebody who treats you badly. And it's another thing to not harbor hatred towards that person. But it's far beyond normal human experience to do good for someone who hates you. Brethren, God made every human being with the potential to become his child. And Christian virtue is to see that potential in others, even the unborn, who are made in the image of God. And obeying the sixth commandment, "You shall not murder," is just the beginning of Christian virtue. And virtue is understanding Jesus' teachings by living this commandment. Yes, by avoiding the actual sin of murder and violence, that involves dealing with your anger and your rage and replacing that anger and hatred with actively loving others. And we have to move onward from that. When you submit to God, recreating the inner person, you will begin to experience what God actually wants in your life. And it's what the Apostle Paul called the fruits of the Spirit. And he listed them. The fruits of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And you know, that's what we all really want. Those are the things we want in the inner person. Brethren, many people think that the Ten Commandments is some outdated legal code for an ancient people. And brethren, they're actually the first steps in learning how to be a disciple of Jesus Christ. He doesn't want his followers to be like whitewashed tombs. Think about that gruesome image he gave. Good on the outside, but filled with decay, spiritual decay on the inside. And let's look at outward love. So let's look at another thing he said here on the Sermon on the Mount. He says in Matthew chapter 5, verse 27, Matthew chapter 5, verse 27, we're still here in Matthew. "You have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not commit adultery. This is the seventh of the Ten Commandments. In this commandment, God protects the sanctity of marriage as ordained between a man and woman. Brethren, to commit adultery is to disrupt God's design for humanity. So here's what he says. He says, "But I tell you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart." And you think to yourself, how in the world do you commit adultery in your heart? Well, think about it, brethren. Just because a person isn't sleeping around on their wife or husband doesn't mean that they're being faithful to their spouse on the inside, on the inner person. And we're back to Jesus' teachings that actions are produced and are a product of our thoughts and emotions and motivations. I mean, brethren, I'm pretty sure, you know, when you've gone maybe to the mall or maybe to a restaurant, I'm sure you've seen a guy out with his wife or his girlfriend in a public place, and it becomes obvious that he's eyeing every attractive woman that walks by. You just see his head swiveling left and right. And here's a meme that is very popular. And if you have your video on, if you're not just on audio, oops, you can probably barely see it. But you can see right there more or less where the gentleman is just turning around looking at another woman. And his girlfriend or his wife is very upset. Kind of like in disbelief about it. Jesus said that this is a problem with the inner person. Even if this person says, I'm a Christian. And brethren, think about it. What husband wants to find out that his wife is having fantasies about other men? Or what woman wants to find out that her husband is looking at pornography instead of loving her? Not committing adultery, not lusting after another person. That's the commandment. But brethren, what about the positive Christian virtue? Is Christian marriage more than just being sexually loyal? Or is it more than that? Well, it's interesting. Here's what the Apostle Paul wrote to the church at Ephesus. He said, "Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her." And there's also commands in the New Testament for wives to love your husbands. You see, brethren, it's not enough to just be sexually loyal. It's the beginning of the problem. At some point, the commandment becomes outward expression of love. So not committing adultery, brethren, that is just the very beginning. The commandment is not to have sexual relationship with anyone outside of marriage. And yes, that's true. But according to Jesus, the Christian response is to remain pure. We've talked about this, and we're going to go back and look now at the command response. Don't look at pornography. Don't lust after other people. But brethren, what is the virtue? What is what we actively do that is good? Christianity isn't just about bad things. It's not just about do not this, do not that. There's an awful lot of things that we are to do. And what we're to do is to be faithfully love your husband or wife. Because, brethren, the love between a husband and wife is one of the greatest gifts that God has ever given humanity. And it is, brethren. It's one of the greatest gifts that's given to us. And Jesus said that the two great commandments is to love God and love neighbor. Now, notice how we've given two examples about the Ten Commandments, and they arrive at what, brethren? A virtue to love your neighbor. And they're all tied to those two great commandments. The virtue of loving others means to actively be involved in doing good for them. It means you serve them. It means you strive to understand that person and to care for that person. Christian marriage must involve sexual loyalty, and Christian virtue involves actively loving each other. And the last of the Ten Commandments contains instructions on how to love others and to not participate in self-destructive behavior. But the first four of the commandments deal on how to love God. So the next commandment we're going to explore has to do with our virtue of loving God. Have you ever noticed that some people use the name of God or just the word God as an exclamation point for anything? You'll hear them say God this or God that, or the most popular one, oh my, and you know the rest. What does this tell us about our inner respect for God? The third commandment is not to take God's name in vain. Now that has to do with how we talk, yes. But brethren, have you ever thought about this? When we claim to be Christian, but our bad behavior, our bad conduct brings ridicule on Jesus Christ, are we not taking his name in vain? When people say, oh, you're a Christian? When they say it kind of like, you know, because maybe we're behaving bad or our conduct is horrible. Well, if that's what Christ is all about, they'll say this. Well, if that's what Christ is all about, I don't want to be a Christian. You see, there are deep meanings in the Ten Commandments that teach us about Christian virtue. So far we've looked at three of the Ten Commandments, and we've seen how obeying the commandment leads Jesus' followers to a lifestyle. And yes, it is a lifestyle and it's avoiding destructive behavior. But brethren, Jesus also taught that his followers must be concerned with changing the inner person so that they desire to have God developed in them Christian virtue of actively loving others. So now let's look at one more of the Ten Commandments as a Christian virtue. And let's begin with something that Jesus said. This is something that is recorded in the Gospel of Mark, chapter 2, verse 27. The Gospel of Mark, chapter 2, verse 27. And Jesus said, "The Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore, the Son of Man is also the Lord of the Sabbath." The Sabbath is the fourth of the Ten Commandments. In Exodus 20, there's instructions, and they're very clear. On the seventh day of the week, which we commonly call Saturday, God wants people to rest and worship him. The seventh day is the biblical Sabbath, and it is not discounted by Christians. It's not discounted by Jews or even the Muslims. Everybody agrees that's the seventh day and that's the Sabbath. The message from God about the seventh-day Sabbath doesn't start here, though, with the commandment. It starts in the Genesis account of creation. God created the seventh day as a special day. And the Sabbath is part of God's creation. And brethren, I'm sure you've heard many Christians claim that Jesus somehow taught his followers to not observe the seventh-day Sabbath. They'll question you on why you're worshiping God on the Sabbath. Many people like to go shopping or doing other things on the Sabbath. And they claim that the Sabbath was a command for ancient Israel and not for the church. And I've heard people go as far as to say that if you try to observe or keep the seventh day Sabbath, then you're trying to be legalistic. You know, brethren, I want to read something else that Paul wrote here to the church in Colossae. What he's doing here is he's describing who Jesus Christ is. And he's starting with the premise that we know from the Gospel of John, that Jesus was God and was with God. He was called the Word, and he existed with God before creation, before there was anything, for eternity. There was who we call the Father, and who we call Jesus, who was known as the Word, and he's describing Jesus Christ. And brethren, here's what he says. Turn to Colossians chapter 1, verse 15. Colossians chapter 1, verse 15. Colossians chapter 1, verse 15. He, and it is speaking of Jesus, it says, "He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For by him," which is Jesus, "all things were created that are in heaven and that are on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. All things were created through him and for him, and he is before all things. In him all things consist." And brethren, they all continue to exist. And it says, "And he is the head of the body, the church." In this passage, Paul outlines why Jesus Christ isn't just another human being. He's the one through whom God the Father created all things. Now think about that, brethren. God the Father created the angels, the heavens, the earth, the animals, the birds, the sea creatures through Jesus Christ. God the Father created the first human beings through Jesus Christ. And at creation, the Father created the Sabbath through Jesus Christ. And he is also the head of the church. And this puts what Jesus said in Mark in a whole different light. You don't have to turn there. I'll read it there. But let me reread it. And he said, and Jesus said, "The Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore, the Son of Man is also Lord of the Sabbath." Brethren, Jesus is the Son of Man. You see, Jesus is the Lord of the Sabbath. He's also the creator of the seventh-day Sabbath. God the Father created the Sabbath through him, and it's an integral part of creation. It's a time that God has created for us to rest and to have a relationship with him. So now let's look at the fourth commandment as a virtue. The seventh-day Sabbath was set aside by God as a day of worship and rest, and that's the command. And according to Jesus, we are to acknowledge him as the Lord of the Sabbath. And you know what this leads to? This leads to his disciples, also called the church, us brethren, or the assembly meeting with other disciples on the Sabbath day to worship and praise God. The virtue is that through this, we learn to love God with all our heart and all our mind and soul. We experience God's presence during this special time. It's far from being a meaningless commandment. Observing the seventh-day commandment will help us in our relationship with God and throughout also your relationship with God throughout the rest of the week. Now, brethren, do you know what the last of the Ten Commandments has to do with? It has to do with our heart. We've been seeing what exactly Jesus taught in the Ten Commandments. And it's not just thou shalt not. We must understand the importance of the Ten Commandments in our daily walks with God. The fifth commandment, as it says here, is the key to success in life. And the last commandment is about how we need to be thankful for what we have instead of always trying to fill our lives with more stuff. The Ten Commandments is more than just an ancient list of do's and do nots. It's an expression of God's design for human behavior and relationships. So let's summarize what we've covered today, brother. God gives us commandments. They define sin. They define the most basic wrong actions. They're harmful to ourselves and others. And then, brethren, we understand there's another step involved in this. We have to avoid the practice of bad behavior by learning what causes it. And Jesus talked about that. And the third step is that we have to have God create in us a lifestyle that actually changes our thoughts and our emotions, our motivations, so that our actions are now loving God and loving our neighbor. We have Christian virtue. And brethren, this involves a massive change. And Jesus did give a stern warning that surface religion can be like what, brethren? Remember, like a whitewashed tomb. So you're pretty on the outside, but inside you're filled with rottenness and decay. Brethren, God really wants is to change our inner person, your inner person. And I really want to stress that. He wants to change your inner person. It's not like, oh, I just keep the Ten Commandments perfectly. No, that is not enough, brethren. We have to deal with what is in our heart. And we have to actively begin to do this outward life that God wants us to have. And that involves actually in the inner person experiencing love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And all of this, brethren, so we can literally become the children of God. Brethren, I want to leave you with something here today that really puts this in focus to decisions we have to make. We can say, you know, this sounds really good. And yeah, I would like to change the inner person. No, there's decisions that have to be made in this process. Each person must choose whether to obey the living God who gave us the Ten Commandments, to obey his standards and his guidelines for our thoughts, and the yardstick for our behavior that can shape our minds and our hearts. Or, brethren, we can ignore them and choose another way. Okay, brother, we've been talking about how God was to shape your heart and your mind. But brethren, this is where you start. You start with these simple things and move forward to the complex, which is really loving God and really loving others. And you can't love your neighbor if you kill him. So you'll never go back to start disobeying the commandments, you know? Like the mainstream Christians say, oh good, I don't have to keep the Sabbath because I love God. That would be going back and disobeying the commandments. Understand, this very concept does away with the Christian virtue that comes out of the commandments. And in making our own decision, we should remember Christ's words. If you want to enter into life, keep the commandments. In conclusion, brethren, don't miss this opportunity to choose having God develop Christian virtue in your inner heart and mind. Brethren, we need to study. We need to pray daily, morning, night, during the day, or whenever we need God. And brethren, ask God to lead you to a much deeper understanding of the Ten Commandments.